And welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indes, your host, and we have a repeat guest, Doug Peterson. Doug, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
How
well,
you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm a little behind on getting this August show out, so I'm glad you said, hey, I think I want to be on the show again, because I wasn't having trouble finding guests. But you know, every time you have somebody,
the Lord,
yeah.
Yeah, the Lord spoke to me.
Oh, great.
And said that your show would be much better if I were to appear on it. In fact, you'd probably be able to save your show, you know. So I just felt like I should listen to the Lord and be obedient to that. So here I am, you know.
I appreciate
that. I'm trying to be humble
about
it, you know.
I appreciate that. How exactly did he speak to you?
I think I was laying in bed and drinking tea, and I was looking down at the bottom of my teacup, and there was written something down there, and immediately something came to my mind. Oh yeah, that reminded me about the podcast I did a few months back, and you know how I should be doing this again. And so that's, you know, the Lord works in amazing ways. You know, there's no doubt about it.
He definitely does. I totally appreciate it. I had a stack of things of people that I wanted to talk to and stuff, but I guess it was just the way it worked out, right? You said, hey, I need to be on the show, and here you are.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. What kind of tea was it, just in case anybody out there wants to buy some and maybe do their own divining?
I think it was like a purging tea. I was trying to help myself throw up, you know?
Okay.
And, so it didn't taste very good. So I can't really recommend it, you know, but, it did the job. So yeah, I threw up right after that. And then I knew that was God.
All right. So, go ahead.
I'm just all kidding aside. I really liked, the exchange that you and Bob had. On the first part of spiritual manipulation, you kind of came in, you know, you strong-armed him with some scriptures, and I think he used like 1 Timothy 3:7, you know, coming to the knowledge of the truth, and you know, just those clobber scriptures, you know, that people use. And I thought that was a really, I was thinking that's a great way to start a show off, you know, and. At the very end, I think Bob had a really good recommendation that when you have somebody come to you and, you know, sort of does this spiritual strong arm type thing, like they're somehow superior to you in their knowledge of the truth, and Bob's recommendation was that you tell them that God is talking to you as well and telling you not to listen to people like them. You know, I think that was kind of the recommendation he had.
Yeah, absolutely. And he figured that out through years of experience, you know?
Right.
And that's great.
Yeah.
I think the problem is when it's younger people who don't know how to say that or don't know how to defend themselves, or when somebody can quote a lot more scripture than you can. I mean, I used to be in that position, right?
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I know how to play the game. You just make up stuff. Well, it says in Hebrews 5:15. Come on, you haven't read that? You know, just start pulling out verses.
Yeah, right.
You know.
No, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't. Well, maybe
most of us probably don't know right off the bat what that says. You know, but you know that's okay. You know, you don't have to have the whole Bible memorized to, you know, be inferior to someone else's talk. You know,
right. But it's an easy way to manipulate people. You just haven't read the third chapter of Malachi, brother. You just need to go read that. That'll answer your questions.
Yeah, so, Second Hezekiah, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear as a bell. Clear. That's another one. When somebody says it's clear, if they use the word clearly too many times, it's obviously not that clear.
Not so clear.
Yeah. So anyway, you got some good stuff planned. I know you want to talk about a lot, so I don't want to ramble on if you got some deep insights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was going through, since Down the Line is kind of a bit devoted to music, particularly, the classic, I don't know what you want to call it, faith-oriented music from the 80s and 90s, you know, some of the stuff that people listened to back then, and how it's kind of come along, and some it's progressed, and sometimes it's people have changed their views. But one of the mainstays of the 80s for the music sort is Steve Taylor. He had a song back in 1985 on the first album called I Manipulate. And I thought I would read some lyrics off of that from I Manipulate. It says, does your soul crave center stage? Have you heard about the latest rage? Read your Bible by lightning flash. Get ordained at the thunder crash. Build a kingdom with a cattle prod. Tell the masses it's a message from God. Where the innocent congregate, I manipulate. Then I'll read one more. Take your notebooks, turn with me to the chapter on authority. Do you top the chain of command? Rule your family with an iron hand. I dispense little pills of power from my hideaway ivory tower. From the cover of heaven's gate, I manipulate. So, you know, like there's a lot of material song-wise that speak about this topic as well. And Steve is one of them that wrote that. And do you remember a magazine that was put out? I think they stopped publishing sometime in the late 90s, perhaps, but it was called The Wittenberg Door.
Yes, I remember being handed it in like a brown paper bag so no one else could see what they were giving me.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I think they even had a cover like that once. They did all kinds of fun stuff for the covers as well. But they basically, their whole thing was to sort of poke fun at the stuff in within the Christian realm that they could poke fun at, you know, just to sort of let people know that there's no sacred cows, you know, that everything is up to, you know, we can talk about this stuff, you know, we can have a little bit of fun with it. And some people got, you know, their knickers in a twist over some of the stuff that was in the magazine, you know, thinking maybe this is, you know, you can't touch this topic, but they did, you know. And then I think the first editor took it to a certain level, and then they had another editor in the 90s, Ole Anthony. And Ole Anthony, I guess he wanted to take the magazine and use it to sort of expose a lot of the charlatans behind the televangelist pulpits and all that. So it kind of took on a bit of a turn for being a more of an exposure magazine, and which I thought was really good at the time because there was definitely a lot of that going on. You know, people were getting very rich off of, you know, the people who are vulnerable, you know, you're listening on the radio or watching it on TV. And now it's kind of like, you know, we're almost guarded by that stuff, you know, but there's still a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there is. And just for the sake of clarity, if people are listening for the first time going, who are these guys? Are they bitter or whatever? We both are somewhat members of the clergy, right?
You're right.
Yeah, so yeah, we're not outsiders necessarily saying, everything is bad. We're both in the kind of in the thick of it. I mean, I am at least.
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't like this isn't the agnostic podcast, you know. You know, I've certainly been around the block a few times with this stuff. And, you know, as much as I have, you know, serious concerns, I also, you know, have a love for these people too. Which is probably why, I mean, I think just going to, you know, like when we read the passages in Scripture where Jesus is rebuking, say, the Pharisees, this is coming from like decades of him watching this stuff go on. And it finally reached a point where, you know, Jesus had to do something. There's a marriage between politics and religion going on back in that day. And I think there's Jesus was clearly saying some very strong things, but that wasn't something that came overnight, you know? So.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. I just, sometimes people are listening and, you know, the line of defense is, here's two guys that are on the wrong end of, things or whatever. And that's definitely not the case. We're both involved. We're both Christians. And, we both have been, like you said, kind of around the block on this and have seen it from every angle.
Right, right. I guess context is everything when it comes to these things. I want to read what the definition of manipulation is.
Cool.
And so we have an idea. This is the Oxford Dictionary of Current English, and it has two definitions, manipulate. The first one is handle or control skillfully. So that could be a very neutral thing.
Hmm.
Manipulate, the second definition is control or influence in a clever or underhand way. And that's probably the definition that we're most used to understanding manipulation from. I was listening to this podcast the other day, and if you go to the CBC Radio website, they have a lot of podcasts there. And one of the podcasts, and you can hear it live if you turn to CBC Radio, but it's a podcast called Ideas. Have you ever heard of the Ideas podcast?
No, that in the CBC, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation?
Yeah, I guess I get that up here, and that's something that a lot of people listen to here. I'm in Vancouver, BC. But there's if you go to the Ideas podcast and on the CBC Radio website, if you scroll down, there's one called Magic, Medicine, and the Placebo Machine. And what it's about is this guy, Jay Olson. He, as a kid, was intrigued by illusions and magic tricks. And, when he was in a hospital actually it was in a furniture store, some guy pulled a dollar from his ear. You know, and that just kind of got him completely intrigued by this world of magic. He wanted to do stuff like that. He wanted to, learn about how to, intrigue people's imaginations. And so as a kid, he had like large audiences, got very popular. And then, as he got older, he, earned a PhD in, psychiatry and he went to McGill University to study the power of suggestion. And he wanted to draw from his world of magic tricks and apply it to the world of medicine and healing. And so he became intrigued by this thing called the placebo effect. And with the placebo effect, if you were to come to, say, a clinician and say, I've got a migraine issue, or I've got a short attention span, I've got ADHD or something like that. What he's learned is that, and he's actually doing this, he's applying this right now, that you can build a trust with that person and do some positive sort of manipulations to better that person's life. And so it's kind of like... if you were to, I hope I'm explaining this right, because otherwise what I'm saying could be interpreted very wrongly. At McGill University, they have this machine that they built, called a placebo machine. And what they do is they say that, your mind is a powerful thing, and, if you participate with this, after repeated visits, you will see some results. And so what he'll do is he'll take a person and they'll lay down in this machine and then he will, do what they, like a scan on the person. And the person's believing that something's actually happening because it's actual a medical machine that doesn't actually do anything. But then he'll do like he'll have them pick a number between 1 and 99, and because he's got like this magic background, that person will pick a number, and then he'll say, okay, tell me your number, and then they'll say, oh, it's 93, and then he'll show them a flashcard, and sure enough, it'll be 93. And he gets this three times. And what that does is it it's kind of like, I remember I was at a magic show once, and my daughter was having a birthday party, I think. And the magician looked for a volunteer in the audience, and I happened to be the one he picked. And I went up front, and he put a handkerchief over my hands, and, I think he told some joke or something like that, and he shook my hand from underneath the handkerchief. And then everybody clapped, and I sat down. And then he's like, oh, do you know what time it is? And I looked at my wrist, and I realized he had taken my watch off. And I'm like, how in the world could he have done that? How could he have taken my watch off? Because I was completely, it's a tight wristband. But it was that whole thing of, while he moved my hand from underneath that handkerchief of his, he was able to unlatch my watch band. And so I think sometimes when you do like a magic trick where you have someone pick a number between 1 and 99 and you're able to guess it three times, that's enough to sort of make dislodge something in that person's thinking that they're distracted. And something in the brain, I don't know what it is, but something triggers in the brain where if you do that enough times and you tell a person that they're going to get better, the placebo effect is that they do get better. And he says that in many cases, people with migraines have overcome their a lot of the migraines, or people with short attention spans have gotten better with their attention span as a result of visiting this machine. So I think that the parallel that I want to do with that is that, in some cases they've actually talked about people going in for what they call a placebo surgery, where an actual surgery doesn't happen, but after the surgery takes place, the person feels significantly better. And in some cases, it's more effective than real surgery. So I think the power of our mind can definitely change things for us. And so is that deception? To some degree, yeah, it is deception. We're telling people white lies about the fact that, something's going to change. We don't know that that's going to happen, but with the proven stuff that has happened to people that have had these placebo things happen to them, there's proof that it does affect people, And so I think in some ways that's a form of mind control that's actually a good thing, which, I think is a positive thing that, if you look at the people that are being taken by, say, someone who, has a book that they need to read from, a spiritual perspective, and you just send me $50 and I'll give you this book. Well, we all know that book didn't cost $50 to produce, and, it's kind of a way for someone to make a lot of money. So...
That's wow. There's a lot of interesting points there. I've always thought when people would quote that verse from Jeremiah that they were out of context. I know the plans that I have for you, plans to prosper, was a bit of a lie. But it did make people in some cases feel better. I mean, it's obviously not something you tell the Chibuk schoolgirls, or you tell the Christians that are getting killed by ISIS while they're being killed. Hey, I know the plans the Lord has for plans to, but it's also that idea with the book thing. And I kind of mentioned to you this early with, it's kind of Christian clickbait. You walk into a Christian bookstore. Now you look online, this music will usher you into the kingdom of God. This book, uncovers the true words of Jesus, so whatever. Right. It is lying. Yeah. It is manipulative. But it also does help people feel better. And some people are ushered, maybe, into a deeper relationship with God through it. It's an interesting... I like how you said white lies, because it is. But I don't necessarily think everybody is being manipulative in the wrong way when they're... If I read a good book and I said, Doug, dude, you got to read this book. It changed my life, or this album or whatever... I'm saying that to encourage you to do it. I guess it maybe depends on people's motivations, but who really even knows your own motivation in doing something?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if you want to help the person, and I think it's quite another thing if you want to line your own pockets with the profits made from something, you know. And and only God really knows a person's heart, you know. But yeah, you might have the best intentions of, you know, really wanting to see people healed or changed from, say, a book or music. And so you might say something that's a bit sensational, but I think, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a wrong thing every single time. But
What about, though, when it comes to marketing? And this is one thing that I've been kind of bothered by with some of the bands, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but some of the bands that we cover in the magazine doing kind of the same thing. This is our best album ever. This is the best, you know, or give us money and we'll produce our best album ever. And I've always been like, how can they, you know, that's a little subjective. B, how do you know that's going to happen? And you know, U2 seems to do that a lot. Bono seems to come out early, you know, years before an album comes out, and, you know, says it's their best thing ever. And then, you know, you're kind of interested. I mean, people listen because, you know, he said it's their best album ever. Well, you listen for a while, and then after three albums of them saying that, maybe you don't, but at least it works in the short term. But it still is manipulation. I mean, where does that line come in from being excited about something you're doing versus just manipulating people to buy something? You know, it's challenging.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a fine line. I think you know, you want to be excited about something. You know, in your excitement, you'll exaggerate a bit, you know, to get people intrigued. And then, you know, whether it's the best album or the best book, you know, who's to know? But you know, I think the intention is, you know, you want people to listen up and, you know, be anticipating this thing that's coming out, you know. But it's sales, you know. It's a bit of a tactic. But I don't know that's necessarily, you know, I think it's kind of human nature to want people to be intrigued by what you're doing, or sell something that you really could, you know, make a difference for you musically, or, you know, like in, or you're, you know, reading a really good book, you know.
Stopped. I was getting like an air conditioning noise or something coming from your end.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's quiet now. Maybe you're drying your hair, getting ready to go to work. I don't know. But that.
I don't hear it right from my end.
It's gone.
Okay. That's cool. There's another example I have. Many years ago, I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I had visited this mega church just to check it out, see what people were talking about. And, you know, it was kind of this charismatic, name it, claim it type church. And, you know, they had like a Starbucks thing in the coffee in the auditorium and all that. And so, you know, I just wanted to see what people were attending. And, I only met one person, had one talk with somebody afterwards, and it happened to be a guy my age. He was wearing like this flower shirt, and, you know, and he was talking about, like, you know, oh, isn't it great that we have something just like really solid here, you know, like really solid teaching. And of course, I was thinking like just the opposite. I'm thinking like, oh, I don't want to be here. But for some reason or another, I sort of kept in touch with this guy. And, fast forwarding a little bit further, I was selling a car. I had this Toyota Corolla that I was trying to get rid of, and I bought another car which was a better one. But I was hoping to sell this other car to help pay for the new one that I'd bought, or the newer car. And somehow this guy who I'd met at this mega church caught hold of the fact that I had a car for sale. And so he phoned me up and said, hey, listen, I've got a need for some wheels. And I was hoping that I could borrow that car from you while you were in the process of selling it. And I thought about it for a bit, and I thought, no, that's not such a good idea, because, if I want to show the car, it needs to be here. And plus, I don't really know, what if something happens to the car? What if, you have an accident with it? It's not going to be worth anything then. And then he just kind of came on with this whole thing of, brother, I have a need here, and I need to get around. And you're a good Christian brother, and, you should be, praying and asking God if you should give me the car. And I'm thinking, oh man, this is getting a little crazy. And I'm like, look, I need the money to pay for this other car. And I'm just, thinking very practically. And then he starts hammering me, God's going to really bless you if you just give me the car, And in fact, God will bless you threefold. I promise you, God will bless you threefold if you just give me that car. And I thought, man, I'm being fleeced here. And after that, I never talked to the guy since, that was many years ago. But I realized, here's somebody that's taking his own self-interest. He wants a car. He doesn't want to pay for a car, but he knows I have one. And so, instead of looking at what I'm trying to do with, making some money from the car, he insists that, it's God's will for me to give him this car. And, I just thought in a situation like that, it's really, and he's probably got a theology that kind of goes along with that idea of God blessing somebody if they just, risk big, you in faith, you do this and that's what's going to happen, God's going to bless you, because your heart was in the right place, So I just think, we've got to really be careful, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and thank God you were old enough to see through that, right? Spiritually mature enough to see through that, because some new Christians maybe or some younger people might not have been able to see through that.
I've got one more example, and this one kind of... we could probably write a book about all the stuff that we've been through, as far as people that have, tried to, and I use that word manipulate very much in the, not in an evil sense, but, just the suggestion that, if you believe this or you do this, you're going to be a better Christian, when in your own heart you believe that, God is there and he's working. And, we've all had those experiences. When I was living in Indiana, I knew this, I was part of this youth group. It was like a after school youth group, and we worked with these inner city kids. And, we would get to know the kids, and we'd also get to know the families in the area. It was kind of a blue collar town. And we were actually able to get some, I think a lot of us were Christian education majors, and we wanted to get some experiences under our belt. And this church was really open to us helping out in their town, with the youth, And so one of the kids that we got to know was this, I'm just going to say his name is William. It's not his real name, but just for identifying him. And William was about 17 or 18 years old when we met him, and he was in a wheelchair. He had legs that weren't, he wasn't born with fully developed legs. In fact, he never was able to walk because his legs were quite stumpy and short, and they didn't have muscle. So he was confined to a wheelchair, but that's all he'd ever known in his life, and so he was able to get around pretty well. Another friend of mine was in college, heard about this healing event that was going on in a nearby town. And it was supposed to be this, really large healing event where people were trained to you know, practice this, praying over people and seeing them healed. And I think they were probably taking stuff from, you know, Kenneth Hagin, Kenneth Copeland, this kind of stuff. He said, you know, you should bring William to this. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know. They might target him out, and I don't know if he's even interested in that kind of thing. And but from this insistence of my friend, I did ask William. I said, would you be interested in, you know, going to this healing event? I don't know that, you know, and I told him my concerns, you know, and I said, like, you know, I don't want you to be targeted out or, you know, anything, but, you know, if it's something that you're interested in, you know, we could see what happens. And William was like, yeah, sure, let's go. And so, you know, he shows up in this big auditorium filled with people. And, you know, and they do some teaching, and, you know, and there's a lot of audience participation and all that. And then the actual time comes where they said, okay, now we've got teams of people that are looking for folks that want to be prayed for, and you're going to see healing in your life. You know, they just basically said, you're going to be healed. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, I don't know if I have this kind of faith at all, you know. And I was in my 20s at the time. And sure enough, you know, people are looking around and they see William, you know, and he's in a wheelchair. And so this guy says, I'm going to pray for William and, you know, we're going to see something happen here. And I was thinking, and my gut was just like, oh, gosh, you know. And so they took, they got like three or four people around William, and took him out of the wheelchair, put him on the ground, and they were praying for God to heal his legs. And, you know, and they did this for probably about, you know, 10 minutes or so, or it seemed like eternity, but it was probably only about 5 to 10 minutes in reality that they were praying for him. And, you know, and it wasn't bad stuff. They were just saying, you know, like, God, you know, please come visit, you know, these legs, and, you know, and we asked that, you know, muscles form and, you know, all this. And it was just like, okay. And then nothing happened. And so then another guy comes along and taps the guy on the shoulder and says, you're doing it all wrong. You know, you go find somebody else and we're going to pray for William. So another team comes and prays for William. And they're, you know, stretching his legs out and stuff, you know, and I'm thinking, like, this is not cool, you know. And nothing happened. And I just, afterwards, I took William home, and I was saying, like, yeah, you know, man, I'm really sorry about this. And William was like, no, it's totally cool. I was just there to learn, you know. I didn't think anything would really happen, but, you know, you never know. And so I kind of felt bad about that. So speed up a couple years later, William finds himself in this big Christian community called Jesus People USA in Chicago. And I don't know if everybody out there is familiar with what Jesus People is, but, you know, it's a big intentional Christian commune in the uptown Chicago. And he's living there at that point. And I'm visiting. And William is talking to these younger spiritual brothers, Christian brothers, and he's talking about how, you know, he used to be this wicked satanic priest and all that. And I was listening, and I was going, like, okay, this is... I knew William as a kid. I knew his family. This never came up. You know, he never talked to me about black magic or any of this stuff. But this is his testimony. And so I'm thinking, What is this? You know, why would William be doing this? You know, and I realized, well, you know, it gets an audience, you know, and people want to hear this kind of stuff. You know, Mike Warnke, and, you know, a lot of people made people think that there was, like, they were really evil, and then God got a hold of them and changed their lives around and made them good people. So I think there's an element to where, you know, like, if you have been manipulated spiritually, sometimes you can take that and run with it and use it to your own benefit. So there's almost a ripple effect. I don't know. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Yes. I've heard testimonies speaking evangelistically, you know, when you exaggerate a lot. I've heard people's testimonies grow more and more extreme as they tell it, right? I've definitely heard a lot of that. I mean, basically, you know, I guess the joke is Christians only have two testimonies. One is you went to church your entire life, but you never really were a Christian. You never did anything wrong, you know, whatever. Or the other one is the other side of that, you know, the far extreme version. But yeah, I've heard a lot of those where it's people, you know, and you're like, wait, you did what? You know, you're like, Chamberlain, you had sex with 1,000. When did that happen? You know, that sort of thing. So wasn't it Wilt Chamberlain that said that? I don't want to defame him, but I think it was.
I'm not sure. Sure,
didn't think we were going to go there today, did you? but, you know, it's that kind of thing. Or they were involved with, you know, heavy drugs or, you know, whatever.
There was a lot of that
going on. But it just, you know, I mean, I did tours for a long time. And I've told stories. And I'm sure it's kind of human nature almost. The story, you know, gets changed to what people will respond to, I guess, right? So I think that's kind of part of it too. Plus if you're on the circuit, you got to have a really good story. So it's got to be better than the other guys or you know, whatever.
That's right.
So,
somehow we got trumped that story.
Yeah. But what I've heard personally was, you know, oh, that revival we had last week, 5 people got saved. And then 2 months later, that revival we had last week, you know, 20 people got saved. And, you know, the year later, the revival we had last year, 100 people got saved, including a Satanist, a pimp, 3 prostitutes, and somebody, you know, trying to hang themselves off the thing and drown themselves in the baptism. You know, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Right, right.
It's kind of crazy. But yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Let's elevate the power of God in order to promote, you know, so that we can keep doing this thing, you know, that we want to do, you know, keep traveling with the, you know, the evangelistic, whatever it is. I think, people want to hear stories like that and people's ears perk up, but, you know, we got to be, I'm probably guilty of it myself. I probably have stretched the truth on some things, you know, because I did mission work for a lot of years, but then later it's just like, why did I say that? You know, I had no reason or right to say something like that. You know, I stretched the truth a bit and just to sort of get people to listen. And later I was like, that wasn't true.
Well, I mean, I guess the other side is, and I'm not trying to defend any of that, but I think the Bible, this opens up another can of worms, but when is it okay to speak hyperbolically if the archetype that you're trying to express is true, but the particulars aren't?
Right. That's an intriguing question.
I mean, I guess it's in the context. If I'm thinking that you are, you know, are telling me a specific story about, you know, like Wilt Chamberlain, I just looked it up. He said he had sex with 2,000 women, right? If somebody's telling me, you know, I don't know, something specific, I eat tacos for lunch. I'm thinking of the context that's what they actually did, was they ate tacos for lunch and not talking about it in some sort of hyperbolic, archetypical fashion. But a lot of times when we do talk about Christian things, God things, big things, we do, you know, the Bible has these big archetypical stories. Mythology has these big archetypical stories. So there is some benefit on some level for telling the story in that fashion. But I guess it's just the context and what your listener is walking away with. Because if you're walking away with the idea that I ate 300 tacos at lunch, really, that's probably different than, you know, I was so hungry I could eat a horse or, you know, whatever kind of. You know,
right. You'd probably be in the restroom if you'd ate 300 tacos. You wouldn't be telling the story, but you know, for the sake of, you know, how, you know, describing how hungry you were, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I've seen, you know, the healing story reminded me of a friend of mine who was in a youth organization. I won't mention their name, but they'd go out on these mission things, and they were in Central America. And they were praying for someone who they said, like, God's going to heal this kid right now. and it didn't work. You know, it's like 40 minutes into it, an hour into it, somebody else got a new word from God that said he's going to heal him when we're gone. So they left, and they left with their faith intact because, you know, God, you know, was going to heal this child after they had left already. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a whole new thing too. You know, the spiritual manipulation of, and this is one I've wrestled with, and it's too late in the show to open up that can of worms, but when you get involved in some form of open theism, and I'm not, you know, I do like Greg Boyd a lot. I'm not trying to attack him. And I do listen to his podcast a lot. He's taught me a lot, particularly about the nature of God in the Old Testament. But I've seen the idea of open theism, like I just explained, in a very manipulative manner, when you can change prophetic, messages, because it's not you didn't hear wrong, brother. It's God just changed his mind. God's moving in a different direction. So I've seen it on all sorts of ends. And then of course everybody is leaving very confused, except for the person who said it, because I didn't hear wrong. God just changed my mind. So I don't think that would have worked in the Old Testament when prophets were getting stoned for not telling the truth. They didn't have that excuse of God just really didn't know the future. Yeah. I guess that's it. I guess I shouldn't say God didn't change his mind, because there is some verses that speak to that, but it's God didn't really know. That's what the problem is. God doesn't really know what's going to happen, so he's just giving you his best judgment.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have known people to sort of predict when Jesus would return, and then they'd give a date, okay, and then that date passes, and nothing's changed, and then they have to have a way of saving faith. So they'll come up with something. Well, you know, something didn't line up right, you know, and I've got a new word from God, and eschatology is another thing that I think can mess with people, especially if it's like from a sort of a pre-trib type thing where Jesus is supposed to return in your lifetime, or you believe that, I was thinking about manipulation from places of power, and I'm probably going to be stepping on some toes, maybe. But I think there's some real concerns with the current power dynamics that we have in America right now. Am I allowed to get into that here?
Well, the problem is we're out of time.
Okay.
So can we do it? Can we do it in the next podcast?
Sure. Okay, I just saved myself.
You did. You can step back, see what you want to say.
God didn't want me to talk about this, and so we ran out of time.
We did. We did. But do you have, before we get going, besides down the line, do you have a blog or anything that you write, if people are more interested in your views?
No, I just write some music reviews and do the odd interviews, stuff like that. I've got one coming up on Alice Cooper in the next, it should be up at some point, in the next little while. But, I just do the music stuff, and I don't have any blogs as of yet. So.
All right, cool. Well, let me ask you this. Since you've done all this preparation, we only got halfway through it. Can I have you on again for September's podcast?
Well, if the Lord speaks to me about that.
I forgot. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, of course.
Excellent. Cool. Sure. Well, thanks a bunch, and we'll look forward to hearing your views on our country. Our country next time.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, I'll be ready to hear your views on America.
All right, then.
Thanks.
All right.